Hey, it's Bex here, and this is Fun Kids Meets, the podcast where we meet amazing people. And this week, you can hear my chat with the rather awesome David Baddiel, all about the 10th anniversary edition of his book, The Parent Agency, and its musical stage adaptation in the making as well. I started off by asking him, was it just a coincidence it's having a 10th anniversary edition, just as the main character in the book is also 10 years old as well?
I had never thought of that, but yes, you're quite right. In the book, The Parent Agency, Barry, my main character, is about to turn 10, and he wants all these exciting things for his birthday, and he doesn't get them, or isn't about to get them, from his parents, who are just too tired and too exhausted and a bit kind of like not quite connected to him enough at the start of the book. So he gets really angry with them and wants to have better parents. So he cries out in his bedroom for better parents, and he goes into a world which is essentially one in which children can choose their own parents. And he gets to try out 5 different types of parents in order to try and find his perfect parents. And I won't say what happens, even though the book is 10 years old, because I want kids who didn't read it 10 years ago to find out what happens.
Oh my goodness. Well, I won't spoil too much, but the parents he kind of goes through are the kind of parents you do think in an ideal world, yeah, I do want rich parents, or I do want those famous parents. You kind of, as a kid,
he's got this idea, which is kind of unfair, about his own parents, which is that they're, you know, they don't have enough money and they're a bit boring and they're tired all the time. So he chooses the opposite of that. When he's given the opportunity by the parent agency, he says, well, I'd like rich parents, or I'd like parents who are famous, or I'd like parents who are never tired and stuff like that. And then suddenly these parents appear and they are absurdly rich or absurdly energetic or absurdly famous or whatever. Actually, I do a thing now when I go and read to kids where I do say to them, okay, look, I know some of you may love your parents, or all of you, and some of you may even have your parents here, but if for a day you could have any other parents, who would it be? And I sort of give them the microphone. And they practically all say something like, I'd like Cristiano Ronaldo and Dua Lipa. Something like that. They just choose the most famous people and rich people they could think of. And they all get really excited about that. So I've clearly hit on something that kids, even though they obviously do love their parents, they might just want for a day to have more glamorous ones.
I love the idea that the parents are sitting in the background being like, yeah, thanks, David Baddiel. Cheers for that.
Yeah, no, well, actually, when I was young, I don't think I did want to have like really, really famous parents. But there were just some friends of mine down the road who had parents who always had nicer food in the fridge than mine. And I just really wanted to go and live in their house for a bit.
It's you can't help but compare yourself to your friends. And that's what Barry does in the book, I guess, isn't it, as well? He's got his pals who seemingly can do anything they want. Their parents maybe shop at fancier shops. And you can't help as a kid but compare yourself to other people.
Yeah, it's basically a the grass is always greener story. And the thing about grass is always greener stories is you tend to find out that it's not as green on the other side of the fence as you think. But again, no spoilers at all. Actually, the idea came to me from my son. So I should be worried about that, although he's now 19. But when he was 8 and a half, he said to me, Dad, why doesn't Harry Potter run away from the Dursleys and go and find some better parents? And I said, well, I don't know really about that book, but I can tell you that's given me an idea, which is a world in which children can go in search of better parents. And as I say, the idea came from my son, so I'm the one who should be worried.
But does your son get royalties from that idea? Because that's the important thing, David.
I bought him something which doesn't, does it still exist? I bought him an iPod to thank him for the idea. That was his royalties. And he's happy with that.
Oh, that's all right then. That's not too bad. What was it like going back to it 10 years out? Did you have to like change anything in the book? Any kind of like different references to TV shows or anything? Or were you like, you know what? This is gold. Brilliant. Well done, me.
Well, I didn't want to change very much about it because that book's done really well. There's going to be a musical of it, hopefully, next year that I'm writing. Lots and lots of kids have read it. I don't want to change it, even though some of it might not be as up to date as it used to be. Probably now when Barry went through to the world in which he'd choose his own parents, there'd be parents with amazing technological gadgets. Nothing like that happens in my book because it was 10 years ago. But I did write some bits of new material for it. I wrote 2 new chapters for this in which I completely pilfered the musical is what I did. So me and a guy from The Feeling called Dan Gillespie-Sells, who wrote a brilliant musical called Everyone's Talking About Jamie, we've written a musical. And so what I did was I just nicked some of the lyrics from that musical. And in 2 chapters now, Barry and the people around him burst into song. That's what happens. And so you get a little taste of the musical. And also, I like those chapters. They're really funny, I think. He can't understand where the music's coming from, and he can't understand why he's suddenly dancing, because basically he's in a musical, is why.
It's so much fun because, yeah, like you say, you've added these extra chapters for the anniversary special. I also like the idea that maybe your publisher said to you, can you have some extra chapters? And you were like, already done.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's exactly what happened. I've already written a new version of this story. Here it is. I mean, if I was really going to do it properly, I'd have added some kind of link to Spotify where you could actually hear these songs being sung, but I haven't done that. You're going to have to wait for the musical for that. But yeah, Barry, there are new chapters. I mean, I sort of quite got into it, actually. I started to think, oh, I could have quite fun just, you know, adding new bits to all my old books all the time, because like you could add little footnotes and all sorts of things, but it's just two chapters in this one.
I was going to say that because it must be quite tricky to find a point that you wanted to go back to and kind of like expand, but I guess having made the musical or working on the musical, you've kind of got it in the back of your head already, I imagine.
Well, one of the things about a musical, which I've written a musical before, the book, not the music, and someone said to me that with a song in a musical, you should find a place where the character feels, I'm so like whatever, I've got so much energy about what's happening now, I can't keep it in, I have to sing, right? And actually, there are a few points like that in The Parent Agency, like when he first arrives and he doesn't know what's going on and there's all these kids telling him what to do and telling adults what to do. And that's a point in the musical where they sing World Run by Kids, our song about what's going on. And so in the book, that is what happens now at exactly that point. And there's another point later on like that. And I think, yeah, it's quite a sort of exciting way of going beyond just words on a page.
It's the chapters, the extra chapters are really funny, like, and it's as a reader quite exciting to feel like you're getting a sneaky peek of a musical yet to come as well. Like, that was a really, I was reading it and I was like, oh man, I feel like I'm, you know, like in a little club basically.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, I think it will be happening, the musical, next year, and it's good. It's a good subject for a musical. It's kind of like Matilda, but a whole other story. And actually, it's about a little boy, or a little sort of like, he's got quite an adult way of thinking, Barry. But he is, you know, it's about a boy. And there aren't that many things at the moment for boys. And so I think that hopefully will be a good thing.
And are you aging him up by 2 years, did I read? He's going to be 12 in the musical.
In the musical, he's going to be 12. He's 11, going to be 12, rather than 9, going to be 10. And I did think about changing the book so it's like that. But actually, no, I wanted to stick with him being about to be 10, because there's something about the round number. So basically, something else that happens, if you haven't read the book, something else that happens is once he's in the world of the parent agency, it turns out that something terrible, it's never quite specified what it is, happens to you if you haven't found your perfect parents by when you turn 10, on midnight, when you turn 10 years old. And obviously 10 is quite good from that point of view, because it's a big round number and it's sort of the end of childhood or whatever. But it has to be 12 in the musical, because we can't have a kid that young singing. It'd just be too difficult to find a child who can sing songs like that.
Say, reading the lyrics there, I was thinking, gosh, they're going to have to get some good old kids to be on stage. I mean, I'm sure you'll find it.
We have already found some of them. I mean, we've done workshops and there's some brilliant, brilliant young kids for it. Yeah.
And did you think when you wrote it 10 years ago, this would be like the beginning of your children's book story, quite literally? Or were you just like, I'll just write one and see what happens?
It was totally the latter. Totally, like, I just... Because I don't really write anything. I write loads of stuff, but I don't write anything unless I've had a good idea, what I think is a good idea. I don't really, like, particularly with children's books, I think occasionally people will say, oh, so right, you're jumping on the David Walliams bandwagon or whatever it is. And I like, no. One day that my son said to me this thing that gave me an idea, which is a world in which children can choose their own parents. That is a good idea for a children's book. I'd better write that. And then I didn't think I would write another one unless I had some other ideas. But then I did have some other ideas, and I had 10 other ideas, it turns out. And I've just written a new one, which is about a kid who works for his dad's burger van, and his dad won't let him cook, but he's sort of washing up and stuff, but he really wants to cook. And his dad's, it's a burger van outside a football ground, and his dad makes the most terrible burgers. And then his son eventually is allowed to cook and cooks the most brilliant burgers. And people from all over, you know, nearby come to eat burgers. But the local bonkers burgers that may or may not be based on a very famous fast food chain get very angry about this and try to shut him down. And that's called Small Fry and will be coming out later this year, I think. Yeah.
First of all, thank you for giving me that little exclusive there. That's a little sneaky peek. Secondly, Small Fry is such a good title for that book. That's amazing.
It is a good title. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah. And I've just written that. I finished that and sent it off, and I'm waiting for the drawings to come back.
Oh, wow. And yeah, I should actually give a shout out. Jim Field, your illustrator for the Parent Agency. Incredible pictures, like such good pictures to go along with it.
Yeah. Jim Field is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He was my illustrator for my first 5 children's books. And I always really loved his illustrations. They're really strong, really colourful, really bold. And it's a thing when you write children's books, when you get an illustration you like and you get their first pictures back, it's always really exciting. It's like, it's a bit like, because I've done this as well with like movies or TV, where you see your words suddenly, like people are acting them out. It's brilliant. It's a bit like that with illustrations, because you think, oh yeah, that's what it should look like, right? And then I got another guy, because tragically, he left me, Jim Field, to write his own children's books. Another really good guy called Stephen Lenton.
I know Stephen Lenton. Yeah, he's great.
Absolutely great. But he's left me too now. So I think I've got to find a new illustrator for Small Fry.
What are you doing to these illustrators, David?
What happens is, I don't think it's me, could be me, but what I think it is that they're really good. And then my books like are read by lots of kids, and then they think, okay, lots of kids are reading this and they're looking at my illustrations, I should be doing my own books. And they're often right about that, unfortunately. So they go.
You can just say you're nurturing new talent. Say that you're finding one of the newest illustrators. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're basically a hero. Now, before I let you go, we do something on Fun Kids with authors. It's like a quick fire round of questions, so like a this or that game. No wrong answers, no right answers, apart from the last one, which I will judge you on, but we'll get to that in good time.
All right.
So first of all, super easy, books or Kindles?
Kindles now. I used to be totally books. But a combination of environmentalism and losing books made me decide that I'm going to read on Kindles. I still occasionally pick up a book, but I also like, and this is a terrible old man thing to say, it's easier for me to be able to make the words bigger. You can't do that with a real book. Like sometimes I have to make the word bigger because my eyes are old and I can't do that with a book. I know even doing that will help. So yeah, so it's Kindles now. But I still like the look of books. I still have loads of books at home. I don't get rid of books because I like them.
Me too. I also like the smell of books, to be honest.
You know, I really like them, but I mainly read on Kindle. And sometimes audiobooks now.
Oh yeah, loads of my friends.
Offer me that as an option, but I sometimes do a lot of audiobooks.
Okay, well, we'll check out the one for Parent Agency.
I'm listening at present to David Mitchell's Unruly. Do you know that?
I'm reading that.
Oh yeah, okay, well, I'm listening to it. David Mitchell's very funny book about history. And it's really great listening to him read it.
I'm actually in a race with my friend because I'm reading it, but he's listening to it on the audiobook.
Well, it's the one thing about audiobook, I love audiobooks actually. I really like them when you get a good one, but you do have to go at the pace of the speaker. And I actually went before my eyes turned to nothing. I used to read incredibly quickly and used to be quite proud of that. But now, yeah, I tend to just listen to whatever. You know, I tell you, can I let you into a secret about myself?
Yeah.
So I don't sleep very well. And I've noticed that one thing that helps me sleep is listening to an audiobook at half speed. Because suddenly, whoever it is, David Mitchell, whoever it is saying, and so the next thing that happened was, and it makes me fall asleep. And so I often do that.
I hope you tell David Mitchell, like, your book made me fall asleep.
Well, I did actually just get an email from him saying, because I wrote to him saying how much I was enjoying Unruly, but I didn't include that information. So now it's blown. There we go.
Next time you should. Would you prefer heroes or villains?
As something to write or something to read?
It's up to you.
Well, villains can be really good to write. They can be really funny. There's a very funny one, I think, in Small Fry. But sometimes I don't have a villain in my children's books because I think sometimes the thing to fear comes from somewhere else. So in the Parent Agency, the fear is what happens to me if I don't get parents by a certain age. And it's a more mystical fear. And I kind of like that as well. And also with my heroes, who are practically always children, boys, girls of a certain age, normally about 10 or 11, even though they're heroes, they're not obvious heroes. They're kind of a little bit anti-heroes. And sometimes they're kind of like quite cynical kids. They're always funny, hopefully. They're often like Barry is quite annoying when he starts out because he's like, doesn't hate his parents, but you know, he basically could be nicer to his parents. And so they're heroes, but they're not like, you know, Superman, exactly, my heroes. So in the end, I'm going to plump for heroes that are a bit anti-hero-ish. That's what I like.
By the way, speaking of funny books, I did laugh out loud a lot, but especially during the naming of the children, Jeremy, Teremy, Sea Enemy, I laughed. Yeah. Oh, delicious.
And Dave. Yeah.
And Dave, yeah, why not? Film adaptation or TV adaptation?
Again, a few years ago, I definitely have said film adaptation. I did write a film adaptation of the Parent Agency, which sadly never happened for Disney. I wrote that and to give you a really dull answer, is that TV is more likely to be made. Films are very hard to get made. I think now I'd really like it if all my children's books were sort of made for TV, because I think TV, you know, is just good at that now. It's good at making like long form stories. And what I most like about writing children's books is I like the storytelling. element of it. I like the fact that with a children's book, you can really let your story engine fly, you know, and you can just decide, right, I'm going to have this thing happening and all the elements that might come from this idea are going to be happening in this story. And I think TV, if you have, like, you know, enough money, if a big budget, basically you want to see all that, right? Like the world of the parent agency that Barry goes into, you could create that as a really amazing universe, and all the characters could be amazing. So yeah, TV, I think.
I think there's a musical as well. It's going to be quite impressive.
Well, yeah, stage. I also really, you didn't give me that option, but stage is another option that I like too.
Writing for kids or writing for grown-ups?
I don't prefer either. I like both. They use different parts of my brain, although, and also the same part, because I think everything I do is kind of storytelling. So even when I write sometimes quite serious adult books, I'm still telling a story in one way or another. So I wouldn't want to give up either, really. I think it would be odd on this show if I said adults.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that you've read the room there. I appreciate that. Beginnings or endings?
Beginnings are definitely easier. And actually, a lot of my books come, all of them, come from where I've had an idea. Child who can choose his own parents, or in Birthday Boy, a child who wishes his birthday to be every day, or in Head Kid, it's about a body swap between the naughtiest boy in the school and the strictest head teacher. You know, these are good ideas to start with, and I can sometimes write like in a mad way just from the idea for the first 30 pages, and then I have to stop and think, oh, what actually happens? And then I just like work it out slowly, and that's harder. But sometimes the hardest bit, if I can answer you, and you said no wrong answer, is the middle of the book.
Oh,
what I do is I write from the idea. And it's like, oh, yeah, I've had, yeah, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And I think, oh, God, I'm 40 pages in. What actually happens? And then I have to stop and think and really grind it out sometimes. And then after I've worked that out, I know what the ending is, because that's what made it clear. Working out the middle has made the ending clear, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, what is the best part of writing, I would say, is when the endings become clear. And you're heading towards it and you're in the zone and you're really like speeding down the tunnel of story to the end. That's a great feeling. So endings is the answer.
Oh, good answer. Sean Connery or Daniel Craig?
I like Daniel Craig a lot, but my first James Bond was Sean Connery. And, you know, he's my first love, my first James Bond love. So I'm going to have to go for Sean Connery. Sorry.
I don't ask everyone that, just because I thought for the book, we should really cover that base there.
Yes, that's true. Barry is a big James Bond fan, which I was when I was 10 or 11. Actually, I think I'm not that old. I am quite old, but I think I would have been just into Roger Moore territory, in fact.
Oh, right, okay. And Ellie said, I didn't know the Roger Moore, Pierce Brosnan. I was thinking of who I could offer. I just thought, you know what, the beginning and end.
I think it's Roger Moore when I was 11, yeah.
Do you write 9 to 5 or do you write when you fancy?
I write whenever. I write all the time at some level. Sometimes I'm always writing. I'm always trying to have ideas. I'm always thinking about writing. I am like really never really stopped doing that. And sometimes that's quite annoying because I'd like to turn my head off more. I recently bought an office because I decided I want to make my writing a bit more 9 to 5. And when I'm at home, I just can't do that. I end up thinking, oh, I'll just go and see one of my 4 cats, or I'm just going to go and talk to my son who hasn't even got up yet. I'm going to go and wake him up, or I'm going to go and have a cup of tea, or I'm going to see my wife, who's also a writer. And I thought, that's no good. No, I should go somewhere to write. Like, I should go somewhere to work like people do. Which I've never done, actually, because I've just always sat at home and written. And I quite like it. I quite like it. So I try and make my... I don't get there at 9. I get there more like 10:30 and leave it more like 6. So at the moment, I am trying to work like that. I'm not very disciplined. It's quite good for me to try and do that.
I was going
to
say, having it quite strict, isn't it, on yourself? Paddington Bear or Winnie the Pooh?
Paddington Bear.
That's the quickest answer you've given.
I've never really read Winnie the Pooh, and I've always found him a bit weird, whereas Paddington's great. Paddington's funny. I've never quite bought the bib. Winnie the Pooh has a bib when he eats honey.
Yeah,
I've never bought that. Like, why has he got a bib? Like, you're a bear. And also, what, you're going to drop a lot of honey from the paw? I think Paddington is clearer because he's got a hat and a coat and a suitcase. It's, you know, and he's funny. And also, the movies are really good. And so far, there hasn't been a really good Winnie the Pooh movie, I don't think. I mean, there's been famous cartoons from years ago, but not updated funny movies with Hugh Grant in them.
Well, I mean, the mark of a good film. Also, you've just made me think, why does Winnie the Pooh have a bib, but does he not have any trousers? Like, what a weird choice.
I'm afraid he doesn't have trousers. I don't want to dig down into that. He just has a bib with no trousers. I mean, the no trousers element of cartoon bears and cartoon characters, like Donald Duck has a sort of like white shirt and a kind of sailor suit and no trousers. That again is quite odd. But to be fair to Disney, you know, how much of a duck would Donald Duck be if he had trousers? Because then you would be able to see his duckiness, if you see what I mean, right? You need to see the sort of white feathers and the webbed feet and all the rest of it. So I guess that's why they made that decision.
The ultimate philosophical question: how much of a duck would he be?
Yeah, exactly.
I bet that when they went around the table, they were like, really, how could we do it?
It's a bit disturbing that he hasn't got trousers, but he just wouldn't be ducky enough.
Yeah, ducky being the best word. Yeah. And this is the big one, the last one that I will judge you for, so no stress. Salt and vinegar or cheese and onion?
Oh, absolutely salt and vinegar, like 100 times salt. Yeah, so I have said one of my, I am on Twitter, I'm not as much on Twitter, stroke X, as I used to be, which is a good thing. But when I was on it more, I remember getting a lot of likes for saying that I was always upset that when you get chips and they put salt and vinegar on it on the chip shop, it's not the amount of salt and vinegar that seemed to be on a crisp.
Yes. But
that's when you get like the really high level strength salt and vinegar you want. And so, yeah, definitely. And obviously, I've always found cheese and onion crisps a bit upsetting. I'll be honest. I'm sorry if anyone loves them, but they're a bit upsetting and weird. I'm not sure about the whole, I'm not really sure about the whole concept of cheese and onion, right? I've had like two cheese and onion sandwiches in my life, actual cheese with raw onion. And I thought, what is going on? Like, okay, clearly you're not meant to eat that. Whereas salt and vinegar on a crisp or on a chip, always brilliant.
Thank you for this, because that's exactly the answer I wanted. Had you said cheese and onion, I might have been tempted to terminate the interview, to be honest. I would have been livid. And you know what? We can stay friends. This is fine. So, David, thank you so much for telling us all about the parent agency and for chatting all about it. Obviously, it's out now, as it has been for the last 10 years, but also congratulations for it. And I can't wait to speak to you hopefully soon for your next book as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bex.
That was the brilliant David Baddiel on the 10th anniversary edition of The Parent Agency. You've been listening to Fun Kids Meets, the podcast where we meet amazing people. And remember, you can hear more outstanding authors like David on the Fun Kids Bookworms podcast with me, Bex, every other Wednesday. Bye.